Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Sorry about that 2 second pause between the shows, but the show previous to us underran.
We're discussing this. Natalie had a sound effect of a creaking door that we're considering putting on.
Sure. That's fine. Just so you know, that we started bang on 12. They were a little bit before when finishing their show. If anything, we overrun. That's our seal of a seal of guarantee of approval.
Always on time.
No, not always. I'm very near the mark today. I've got that awful corpse sweat that you get when you're in Edinburgh, when you're not hot, but you're just sort of...
Yeah.
Is corpse sweat an actual phrase, or is that something I've made up?
Nah, it's a phrase.
Is it a phrase?
Yeah. Because I think it's from corpses, right? When corpses go
to the gym and they get the real sweat on.
You been in the gym this morning, then?
No.
No?
Okay. No, absolutely not. No, not today. My name's Nick.
And my name's Nathaniel McCall.
And you're listening to Five Star Family Fun Club Fan Club.
Rice Club.
Rice Club. That was a big hit.
Big hit, Rice Club. People loved Rice Club.
People fucking loved Rice Club.
It turned out, we thought we were having a little joke. It turns out it's actually people prefer it to what we normally talk about.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. You can't plan these things.
No.
But maybe we should just do a show about rice now.
Well, I think that's it. Is anyone already doing a show about rice on FUBAR? No?
No. Oh. There's a gap.
Yeah.
She hasn't confirmed that it would be wanted, but...
Well, you can just... we can break away.
Yeah, sure. What did we get to, though? What was our findings?
Oh. Our findings on rice?
Yeah. Everyone
likes rice.
Everyone likes. Well,
I was struggling. I was having an issue about what rice I should have at things, and you said I can basically have whatever rice I like. It's on the menu.
Yeah, if it's on the menu, you can have it.
Yeah, I know. I just sort of sometimes think there's certain, like wines. I always think, am I supposed to have a certain thing?
Yeah, but fucking, just drink what you like. If you want white wine and you're eating steak, have white wine. Anyone that's going to judge you on that is just better than you.
Have you ever been to a restaurant where there's been a sommelier?
Yeah, loads, mate.
Yeah, I've been once.
Didn't
like it. Hated it.
Well, it's sort of a sommelier. It was the guy that collects trays at McDonald's.
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah. No, I've been to loads of places with a sommelier. I heard a story from a sommelier the other week. I was eating in a restaurant. I probably shouldn't say
which one.
Yeah, but it
wasn't Pizza Hut.
It wasn't Pizza Hut.
Narrow it down.
It was a nice restaurant. I was out with my friend Joe DaCosta, who's been a guest on Fan Club.
Nice boy, lovely boy.
He's got an album out called his act is called Beg Friend.
Mm-hmm.
Really good album. It's an EP, and I went to see him live, and he's amazing. So if you're listening to this. Former fan club member, current fan club member,
yeah,
former guest.
In the club.
Once you're in a club, you can't get out of the club.
Mm, unless we expunge them from the club.
Have you seen that Las Vegas advert online?
What about going to Las Vegas?
Yeah. And it's all like showing about like all the great things that you can do in Las Vegas. I've been to Las Vegas, and it was literally like visiting hell. I was with my girlfriend at the time. We were holding hands, walking down the road, and we were both repeatedly flyered for prostitutes.
Oh, okay.
And
so like Edinburgh.
So it's like Edinburgh, and it's not the Free Fringe. Yeah, and it was just hot, and the sky was dark, and you could smoke everywhere, and it was just sort of like, it felt like as close to going. It was like being at Pleasure Island in Pinocchio. It's fucking. We were all jackasses. This is an advert online for Las Vegas, and Aerosmith come on, and. And he says...
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler. So the phrase is, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But he says something that's not that. I can't remember. I'm sorry, I forgot what I was saying halfway through. This is a fan club first. He was like saying, what you do in Vegas, you only do in Vegas. And it's kind of like, but he says it
just
to
do the phrase.
He says it to the crowd, and then the whole crowd chant it back at him. And it's just kind of like, how did everybody know this wrong phrasing of this famous phrase? It was really weird. Anyway, so I was out with Jace Costa. We were having a meal, and then the waiter came over, and he said that he used to be a sommelier. He used to work at this posh restaurant. And we were like, right. And he said that Nicolas Cage came in. Right. And Nicolas Cage was like, don't let me spend loads of money on wine because I haven't got a lot of money at the moment. Right.
That's a good thing for him to have said, though.
So he said,
it shows a good level of, understanding and self.
He's not talking about buying $7.99 Yellowtail, right? He's talking about...
No, he's saying, don't let me get like a 500 quid bottle of wine.
No, he's like saying, don't let me get a 10,000 bottle of wine.
Okay, all right.
So they were selling him the 800 bottle, the 800 pound bottle of wine.
If someone spilt some on a table, would you slurp it up?
I would do that with anything. I'd do that with ketchup. So he was like, so there you go. And the sommelier is kind of like, right, I'm not going to let him spend too much.
So then what's the limit then? How do you know in your head what you're...
I don't know, but he bought like three bottles of like 700, 800, pound bottles of wine.
And then would it be tricky to go, is that too much? Or would he be like, no, obviously, that's fine.
No, I think that's fine. But then the sommelier's boss was going, why are you giving him the cheap shit? Why aren't you pushing the stuff? And he was like going, because he said he didn't want to spend that much money.
So it's a restaurant where an $800 bottle of wine is
the cheap
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Sorry. I mean, there's a threshold.
Beyond
there's a threshold that you haven't passed yet.
Yeah. Nah. The threshers hold.
he bought three bottles of 800 pound wine.
I'm not paying £17.
And the sommelier was really kind of like, I don't understand why you haven't pushed this more. And the boss was saying, I don't know, I understand. He was like, he didn't want to spend that much money. And then he leaves and he goes next door to the adjoining hotel. And he orders a 25 centilitre shot of cognac from something like 1820. And it cost $3,500. Can you imagine? $3,500 for a shot. I know you're not meant to drink cognac as a shot, but I'm an animal.
I find that stuff like, I just can't get my head around it.
So the boss was just like, what? I fucking told you, we could have fucking rinsed him. But that's the story.
I mean, that's, I find like that kind of amount of money on wine, I can't get my head around it. Do you know what I mean? I can't sort of, I don't know if I could ever justify it. I suppose if you had Nicolas Cage's money, although he doesn't have it either.
He doesn't have it. but like Johnny Depp's money.
Yeah, I suppose he spends lots on...
What was he spending? Like $100,000 on wine a month?
Yeah, he was doing that kind of thing, wasn't he?
That's how you do it. It's not like you're buying like crates of...
I have $100,000 worth of this one, please.
How can I have... can I have 5,000 bottles of Jacob's Creep Merlot, please? He's not doing that. He's buying...
They're probably
like,
good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
It
makes you less worried, I think. If you're spending $100,000 on wine, you're just thinking, do you know what? He's probably buying, what, 10 bottles of wine? And you go, oh, right.
If you earn past a certain point...
He's not buying 10 bottles of wine. It's somewhere between the two, isn't it?
If you're super rich and you earn millions... Yeah. Actually, though, I suppose wine is one of the few things you can kind of have as a bit of a treat at that level. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
That's,
like,
I think that that's one of the things, I suppose, where if you were rich, it's one of the things that unless you were rich, you would maybe just try once in a lifetime, if that, mm-hmm. you know? If you were had a weird weekend and you ended up staying in a nice hotel that you had been put up, you know, your accommodation had fallen through, and then as an apology, they'd put you up in some weird super nice hotel, and you were accidentally sat next to a billionaire, and they took a shine into you, you know, and then they said, hey, have a glass of this wine, and you try it, and you go, this wine's really nice, and then they say, yeah, that glass cost $1 billion.
And the wine in it? Even more.
Yeah, that's really weird that you bring this glass everywhere with you. Because, yeah,
it costs $1 billion. I don't leave it anywhere.
So I think, you know, but if you were rich, it'd be like one of the few things that you could spend money on that would kind of like really yeah. be.
Do you know what? I've talked myself into it. I'd absolutely do that.
What else would there be?
Yeah, if I was earning
that
kind of money.
You get a security guard. That's yeah. something that you'd only get if you were really, really rich. But
because you could go around the table and go, does anyone else want this really nice bottle of wine?
Yeah. I mean, how much more comfy a sofa could you get if you were rich?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Not really. Only a little bit more.
But yeah, you could definitely get loads of barbed wire and put it around your house. What I'd do if I was rich.
Not that I assume. Not that he's super rich, but someone who's fairly well off. I remember reading in his book, Steve Coogan's book, he said that one of the things he has, that his sort of big thing of having money, he doesn't really know often how to spend money. And the thing he always does is, he's like, I've got enough money that every time I go to a restaurant with anyone, I pay the bill. And I always think, that's quite a nice level. And it's just a thing he always does where he'll always be the one that whenever he goes out with anyone or with a group or something, his thing is always like, I'll get this. And that's the level of fame and wealth he is. And I always thought, that's quite a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Like you just go, I can afford that. There's not going to be a thing where I'm going to, unless he goes out for a meal with Nicolas Cage. Probably. He's probably going to go, oh, fucking hell.
No, I think he'd probably
be all right.
I think you'd probably have to foot the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, probably would, because Nicolas Cage would probably.
He's probably spent it on a Welsh island. Are there islands around Wales?
There may be. Could be. It's on the coast, isn't it? Well,
there you go. If you had to pick a pasta, which would it be?
I quite like. What, the bow ties? Are they. I can never remember which is which. Is that farfal? A farfal.
Sure.
A farfal? Yeah, farfal.
But I think
farfali? Farfal.
Farfali.
Farfali. Farfal?
I think it's
farfal.
The fact that you described them as bow ties, that really nails it.
Yeah. Does it make me look
what are those ones that are shaped like little Saturns, and then there's sort of like some astronaut ones? space shaped pasta.
Yeah,
that's my favourite pasta.
Good one. Good choice.
Yeah, that's the one.
Bow ties.
What's the pasta that's shaped like a little cock and balls? can I get that? I've seen it. bolognese. I'd have cock and balls, a bolognese, please.
Have you got a favourite pasta?
With plenty of parmesan. Have I got a favourite pasta shape? Mm. My favourite, I think, is linguine, which is sort of like flat spaghetti.
Flat spaghetti, yeah.
Isn't that tagliatelle? No, it's linguine. Tagliatelle is different.
Yeah, there's somewhere I struggle to, because there's also spaghettini, that's like thinner spaghetti, right?
Oh, right. Well, I think spaghetti's thin enough, isn't it? Why do you want it even thinner?
Even thinner.
I
don't like it.
There's another one though that's sort of like got frills down it. It's like this long strip like tagliatelle, but it's got frills down the side, and I always think it looks like a tuxedo, like a dress shirt.
God, I can't picture it.
Like a 70s tuxedo
shirt.
Yeah,
no, I understand the concept.
Yeah, like the sort of shirt, not the actual tuxedo.
Yeah, but the shirt
that you'd wear under a tuxedo.
Like a rippled, like like a rippled
frills.
Crisp
frills,
like McCoy's.
Frills. Sort of like a McCoy. No, not really like a McCoy's. Like a frilled shirt that you'd wear under a tuxedo, like a tuxedo shirt.
Oh, I can't.
Like the front of a tuxedo shirt.
Oh, I think
shirt.
I can see it. Yeah, I think I can see it.
You know,
like a the 70s. Frills.
Like yeah, a 70s. Tuxedo shirt.
Like a kind of thing that Jimi Hendrix might wear.
Sure, but done all the way up to the top.
Okay.
And frilled.
Frills.
Yeah, down the side. This is a flat bit down the centre.
Is that Fafal?
Frills up the side.
Fafal?
That's, yeah, that one.
Oh, yeah.
I quite like that one.
I don't know if I've ever had that one,
Oh, it's good. Do you know why?
I've never had it.
No, do you know why it's good?
Why is it good?
Because of the frills.
Do you know what? I like my pasta.
Do you know why the frills?
No frills.
So why are the frills important?
Because they hold a bit of a sauce.
Oh, my God. You knew.
What do you think I am?
You've just described your favourite pasta as the bow tie one.
And then I said a fafal.
But mind you, do you know what that bow tie would go well with? The frills on the tuxedo jacket, tuxedo shirt.
But I think they all do have their own little, they all have their pluses and minuses, don't they?
That's what I like about the cock and balls, because the balls really hold a lot of sauce.
Pasta shells.
And you can kind of like, more than usual. I mean, if you got the cock and ball pasta stuff, you can guzzle like hundreds of them in one sitting. Rather than, you know, the slog that it normally is.
I've told that. Yeah, I definitely have told that story about Paul McCartney's Christmas dinner, and I.
No.
Paul and Linda
McCartney.
Did you say
it to me? Or did he said it?
Natalie's nodding. She's heard it a lot. Never mind. The shells, I like.
I like the shells.
I like. Do you know what? There's very few I don't like. The spaghettini, I'm not a big fan of, because I think it doesn't. It's too thin. That you almost just get clumps of it. And it doesn't really hold a sauce. I like a spaghetti, like a regular spaghetti.
Can I just hold you there? There are 100 islands or islets around the coast of Wales.
Oh.
As you were.
I think it's the thinner ones that I don't really care for. Everything else I'm a big fan of. What are the tubes? The tubes.
Tubes? Macaroni?
Oh, yeah, of course that's macaroni.
Or penne.
Penne. That's what I'm thinking of.
Mm. If I was to own a restaurant, if you were to own a pasta restaurant, what would you call it?
Penne for your thoughts.
In for a penne.
In for a penne.
Or pasta buck.
That's good, pasta buck. Fafal and away.
Lasagna rest.
Don't get that one.
And the rest.
And the rest.
It's not very good.
Lasagna rest, yeah.
Tagliatelle, what? I'm starving.
Yeah, that's good. Go with that.
Go with that.
Go with that one. That's good. Your tagliatelle, you get them in those. You get those in, like, balls, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
You get them in balls.
Yeah.
You have to boil some balls.
The cock is made out of... taped together.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
That's how I do it.
With
a bit of sellotape.
With another ball on the top.
Yeah. Three balls.
You've got two balls that represent actual balls, and then one other ball that represents the penis tip. So Johnny Depp spends $30,000 a month on wine and owns a 75 million town in France.
So how do you own a town? Don't people live there?
Depp said that Chateau Canonsiegue, a son Estefe, I don't know how to, third growth was his top wine. Right, cool. He also name-checked Domaine de la Romane Conti as one of his favourite Burgundy estates and said, with those wines, you reach Nirvana. Fucking hell.
Okay.
Just play an album, innit?
Yes. It's good enough. Is this all right?
Is this all right? Are we doing it? We're doing it.
We're doing it.
19 minutes of nothing.
It'll do.
It'll do. That'll do, pig.
How do you...
That'll do.
I don't really know you own a town. How do you own a town? I own this town.
They own a town. Like, so Kim Basinger...
owns a town?
She was set to star in Boxing Helena.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when she pulled out, she got sued and she had to let go of the town that she owned in order to pay it off. She owned a town in America. Or she was the mayor. Of, I don't think she was the mayor of the town, but she was in... This is like, what, mid-90s?
Yeah.
So she was...
I didn't know you could own a town.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, and I've got an ambition.
I guess you did. Here's the thing. Did you know, right, so I've watched the thing about, you know Rugrats?
Yeah, yeah, the cartoon.
No. What's that? Yeah, the cartoon. So, so Rugrats. Right, so apparently all of the people that created Rugrats, none of them got on with each other. So they were the creators that did it. And it was based on the fact that the woman that created it was pregnant. And then there was the writer, which was a guy, and he was just like, oh, I think it should be kind of like they're adults in babies' bodies. And she wanted them to be babies. So no one got on. But it just reminded me of... that's why they stopped making it, because it was just like, it's too
they
much.
They all hate each other.
But there was a thing. So there was Tommy Pickles, and yes. Then there was Chucky, right?
Yeah.
And I think the woman that did the voice of Tommy did the voice of Babe. In the first Babe movie. And when they made Babe Pig in the city, she asked for too much money. And the woman that did the voice of Chucky said, I can do that. And undercut her. Do you remember hearing this?
No, but I like that idea. Because imagine then having to be back on the set of that
I know, wouldn't it be fucking awkward? Yeah. I mean, they might not record together, but it was like... And I kept thinking about it like they're in trailers and they're not in trailers.
No.
They're in a sound booth. But isn't that fucking awkward? I can do that. I'll do it cheaper.
But they've probably even gone, I might actually try and get a bit more money for the second one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what I'd do? I'd ask for...
I'd say definitely.
What'd you get paid for the first one? 5 million? I'd ask for 25 million.
They wouldn't be getting paid 5 million to do Babe.
No, they wouldn't be getting paid 5 million. How much do you think? Oh, it's a voiceover job.
I probably got
What did
decent.
James Cromwell get paid? He got paid... 100 grand?
Yeah, something like that, 100 grand.
And so if you're doing the voiceover of Babe, you're getting paid 5 grand?
5 grand.
10 grand? Something it's like a couple that, yeah. of days in the booth.
And when they get called back, that's their opportunity to go, oh, now I'm needed. So actually, I'll put that on to my agent and you can bump that up a bit, say I'll see how I'm thinking about it.
If it was me... Mm-hmm. You know, like Spies in Disguise, and it's got Will Smith in it.
Yeah.
But you don't ever see Will Smith. So what I would do is I'd get a Will Smith impersonator to do it.
Yeah.
And then I would just say it was Will Smith.
But you could get that one who's on all those lookalike shows here, and he'd be like, no, that doesn't work. He's just a bloke from like Croydon or
Not
something.
Not a lookalike. Not a lookalike, that would be...
A Will Smith impersonator.
Impersonator.
But that's like when they do the cartoon series of the films, they rarely have the person who was doing it in the films.
Well, that's the thing about, like, Ghostbusters and Garfield.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So when, in the 80s, so Bill Murray was Peter Venkman in Ghostbusters, and then they made the real Ghostbusters, and they got this other guy to do the voice. And then that guy that did the voice of that also did the voice of Garfield on TV in the 80s. And then later on when they made a Garfield movie, they got Bill Murray to do it. And you go, that's genius.
Yeah.
That's absolutely genius. And also you just think Bill Murray is absolutely perfect to play Garfield.
Yeah.
Until you hear him do it. And then you go, why has he done it like that? He literally had to come in and be sarcastic, which you can, you know. He did it like... Phil Connors from the end of Groundhog Day, but he should have done it like Phil Connors from the beginning of Groundhog Day.
You're right.
He blew it.
Do you know what, though? In hindsight, it's even weird now to think that he did it. Do you know? It's like, God, all the things that he turns down and whatever, but he's like, yeah, I'll do that.
You won't do Ghostbusters 3
yeah.
for 25 years.
Garfield 2.
You want to do Garfield too. But that's a payday, isn't it? That's just going, turning up, getting paid.
Yeah.
How much do you think he got paid for that? 5 million?
Loads. Yeah, like easily, I reckon.
I mean, you're basically selling it on the fact that A, it's Garfield, and B, it's Bill Murray.
Yeah. Even though he's just in a voice.
No one else is getting paid. Jennifer Love Hewitt was in it, right?
Yeah, he's a big selling point.
Is it Breckenmeyer?
Might be. I've not seen Garfield, not seen any of them.
I've not seen all of it. can't get through it. Fucking
Breckin Meyer and Jennifer Love Hewitt certainly put it in a time
And a budget bracket.
Yeah, yeah. So really, you're selling that film on Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, but just absolutely. But I guess it was because he wasn't visible that he really went for it in the sound booth. But it's like it's too much. You kind of like do less.
Yeah.
You're a lazy cat. You're not an enthusiastic cat. Come on, guys. Mm. So, I mean, he says in Zombieland that he regrets that film.
What's Garfield's favourite pasta?
Lasagna.
Lasagna, yeah.
Who doesn't know that?
Every time.
Lasagna. Garfield eats so much lasagna that I imagine he would OD on it. OD the dog.
Yes. Yeah, I had forgotten, but it's come back. Yeah. Yes.
John.
He's a man, isn't he?
Yeah.
And that's it. That's
it John Arbuckle. John Arbuckle.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I never like Garfield. I think it's a piece of shit.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think it's a total piece of shit. Like, even when you look at the cartoons, it's like it's absolutely awful.
I like the cartoons, but I like the one on the farm. Was it Orson's Farm?
Orson's Farm.
I like that. I was doing a project where.
Was it school?
No, this was recently, and I was doing a thing, and it was sort of like based on a three-panel cartoon,
right?
Where it's kind of like set up, build up, punchline, right? And I just wanted it all to be very concise, so I bought some Garfield books to sort of like, and fucking hell, he's a sarcastic cunt. Just think, oh, get lost, mate.
Yeah. He don't like Mondays. Perhaps you could have got Bob Geldof to do his voice. That would have been good as well.
I think that the guy that did the voice originally from they should have just got him to do it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like they got Peter Cullen to do. Is that his name?
I don't know. Who's Peter?
To do Megatron.
Who's Peter Cullen?
Or Optimus Prime?
Oh, see, the original guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They did. Yeah. For the movies. So right?
I mean, they didn't go for like the Hollywood equivalent. They just got the guy that everyone you remember the voice from all the stuff.
Who would be the Hollywood equivalent? It would be someone quite stoic and... It'd
be like Liam Neeson.
Yes, it would be like Liam Neeson. That's exactly the right kind of person.
Mm.
Yeah. Well done.
Okay. So we're going to do some fan mail?
Yeah, might as well.
What button am I pressing? Here we are.
Here we go.
Here we are. Now, is this the town hell in Michigan is for sale? It costs 60. It hosts 66 miles of hiking trails and an annual blessing. Oh, this isn't fan mail. The town of hell, Michigan, is for sale. It hosts 66 miles of hiking trails and an annual blessing of the bikes event. You can buy it for £900,000.
That's all right.
That's
isn't
a bargain.
It?
I'd love
absolute
to own a
bargain.
A town called hell. I'd love to own a town called hell.
I'm going to hell this weekend. It's just a town I own.
I would have sex with a prostitute in front of a midget and then paint my entire town literally red and have my sordid revenge on the townsfolk there after they witnessed my own lynching and didn't lift a finger to save me. I am, of course, talking of the movie's plot of High Plains Drifter. Let's... There we go. That's fan club. Well, that's fan club. Tweet from Nina Coggy. Hashtag #5-star pasta club. Smiley face pasta.
Is that the end of that tweet, by the way? The next line
that's
is someone else's.
The end
else's,
of
isn't it?
That tweet.
Doesn't okay. continue. 5-star pasta club, absolutely. What's the emoji?
It's
there?
A bowl of spaghetti with, I think, a fork pulling a thread of. Spag bowl out
yes.
of the bowl, and the red bin in the middle is red sauce.
It's a
funny looking emoji.
I'll be typing in spaghetti into my phone later to see if I can get that to come up.
It will come up. Or bolognese, I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to write bolognese into my phone later and see if the picture comes up.
It's a weird emoji, but one hell of a sentiment.
I'm enjoying this.
All reet cunts.
All reet cunts.
All reet cunts. Oh, it's fucking Jeff Lynne. No, that's Geordie, isn't it?
Reed Kuntz.
he's Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Go on, do
all
it.
All right, Kuntz. It'd be more like that.
do it like Jeff Lynne.
Yeah. All right, Kuntz. I don't usually listen live, soz. I usually download the podcast. But thanks for making my day brighter. Much love, Reid. That's just a nice one. Although she did call us cunts.
All right, Kuntz. It's Brian Johnson from AC/DC. All right, Kuntz, don't usually listen live, soz. Usually download the podcast, but thanks for making my day that much brighter. Much love, Brian Johnson.
Oh, no, it should be like this, of course. It should be, all right, Kuntz, don't usually listen live, brackets, of course, so soz. So the brackets always have to be written in, have to be said in Christopher Lee's voice. Whereas last week.
Yeah.
All right, Kuntz. Don't usually listen live. Soz. Usually download the podcast. But thanks for making my day brighter. Much love, Reid.
Hey, Nick and Nat. Love your show and FUBAR. You've got a proper Reid good guest on today.
Romish.
At some point, I'd appreciate it if you could have Mark Ruffalo on as well. Something to think about for you, Declan.
Yeah, that is something to think about. Are we having a think
Thanks,
about that?
Thanks, Declan. Keep the family rolling in.
Can we have a think about that, Natalie? Mark Ruffalo next week?
Thinking. Yeah. Let's try and get Mark Ruffalo in. He's got a little movie out, I think, at the moment.
He has. He's got Dark Waters
Dark
out.
Dark Waters. It's all about the environment.
That's out next week, so we should probably have it on next Friday to optimise Dark Water.
Let's try and get him in next Friday.
Next Friday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look forward to that next week, guys. Mark Ruffalo on FUBAR Radio on Fan Club.
Mark Ruffalo and Brian Johnson together again, lads.
Brian Johnson on the phone.
Brian Johnson on the phone.
First hour.
Sure, why not? I could be on the phone. I can be on the phone, man.
He's here now.
I'm here. When I first saw a Rolls Royce, my dad pointed at it and he said, there's only one way you're going to get in one of them, if you're buried in one.
It's a weird turn of events.
If it takes your coffin, your casket to the funeral, well, look at me now. I got 10 other cunts. Look at me now, Dad. I'm Brian Johnson. This is Cars That Rock. I'm slightly Welsh.
That's weird. Do people normally get driven in a Rolls Royce when they die?
I don't know, but it's what Brian Johnson's dad told him. He said, see that Rolls Royce? There's only one way you're going to get in one of them. When you're dead, they're going to drive your coffin to the... Right, thanks, Dad.
Well, why not?
Well, look at me now, Dad. I got 10 of the goods.
He's got a funny relationship with his dad, hasn't he? Difficult relationship with his dad. The weird thing is, what you might as well do is, why not just have a ride in the Rolls Royce while you're alive, and when you're dead, we'll just put you in any old car. Then you can appreciate it more. That's what I would have done if I was his dad.
Hello, what's your favourite cheese and biscuit? Mine's a baby bell on a tuck.
We didn't fucking do it with hell. The sound bed. You could have played that before the show.
Okay. Hello. What's your favourite cheese and biscuit? Mine's a baby bell on a tuck. Bobby G. Mine would be corn. What's yours?
Well, do you know what? I had some cheese and biscuits this week, and I think they gave me food poisoning.
How?
I don't know. Well, I had food poisoning after I had the cheese and biscuits. I only had 3 crackers worth, and it was that sort of smoked cheese you get in the sausage shape.
Yeah, sure.
It was that kind of thing. Mm. It was just one of them. It was sort of fine, but I think it built up a rind on it. And I think it did me no good.
Had it been in your fridge for a while?
No. Like a day or two. Mm. But I don't know. It just made me, I don't know what happened to it, but it did me no good whatsoever.
Well, do you know what? I was going to say, you're looking good this week, so I think you're looking better for it.
Yeah, I think so.
Mine, of course, would be a Cambazola on a Jacob's cracker.
Oh, we had some at Cambazola, didn't we?
Cambazola is the nicest of all of the cheeses. It's a bit like a blue brie. Not a blue brie.
Not a blue brie.
But a brie. A brie with threads of blue.
We're always meant to go to Morgan's cheese shop, didn't we? Never went.
Oh, we haven't been yet. Yeah. But Cambazola is obviously my favourite. So, there you go.
Is that? Oh, no, that's not the one that has the... What's the one that has the little bits of... like pepper and things in it and chili in it.
Well, it's not a fucking cambazola.
No.
That'd be like a... I'm just trying to talk about cambazola at the moment.
Yeah, go for it.
Cambazola, it's a creamy, soft cheese, so named after the camembert. It's as if a camembert mated with a gorgonzola, and the cambazola were its offspring. Absolutely delicious. Hello, what's your favourite cheese and biscuit? I've answered this.
Cambazola is a cow's milk cheese that is a combination in style of a French soft-ripened triple cream cheese and Italian gorgonzola. That's kind of what you just said.
I mean, it's... What happened
What was
there?
That there? Was that... It sounded like someone blew a harmonica. Have we got Bob Dylan in?
I think it was a...
car beeping outside.
Right, Nick, you're an absolute mug, mate, for saying rice is nice. Pastry's the best, and anyone that says anything different can job on to Coventry and back.
Guy Ritchie again. He's always emailing.
Well, you hopefully like the first half of today's first hour, first half of today's first half, which we talked about pasta. So, G Ritchie, if that is your real name, you can job on to Coventry and back.
Yes.
Absolutely love
that.
Hi. Hi, Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf.
Well done.
I just saw Parasite last night and it absolutely deserves the hype it's getting because I thought it was phenomenal. I'm struggling to think of another film that is as funny as it is shocking. Do you have any suggestions? Cheers, Lewis.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think Parasite... Did you see Parasite? I haven't seen it. Oh, right, okay.
I've been so fucking busy that I haven't seen anything.
I know.
I've seen a couple of things, but old things.
Old things, yeah. What's like that? I don't think it's terribly dissimilar from a lot of his other movies, to be honest. I think he's got that. It is like that, but they're often that kind of mix of
What else did he do?
He did Snowpiercer. And Mother and The Host.
He did The Host, yeah.
So he's often mixing a lot of kind of quite funny bits with, you know, sort of more...
Well, The Host is sort of like a
wilder
genre bender.
It's
like
sure.
a family comedy, isn't it? And then all of a sudden this huge monster turns up. The Host is great. Not the American film, The Host. It's the Korean film, The Host.
Yeah.
The Host is absolutely fucking... It's great and really sort of like emotional as well.
Yeah, I think that's... That,
Western films, when they tend to make sort of like a big thing about genre bending, but in actual fact, it's literally I don't really get that.
Yeah,
I think it's like, well, we've got to market this to horror fans, or we've got to market this to romantic comedy fans, or and it's kind of like you've got to package it in a thing that's easily sellable.
Yeah.
Whereas I find that,
and I think both halves of it has to be as good as the other one.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't quite work if. Like, we saw that film, I think we both had a similar thing, what was it called? Brawl on Cell Block 99.
Yeah.
That has a sort of midway sort of twist where it becomes sort of completely shifts tone and genre. And I felt that I was enjoying the first half, and I sort of felt that when it became more of an exploitation film, it sort of lost something for me. So I was kind of invested more. And then by the end, it's like, it actually doesn't matter because it's like an exploitation film, it's all a bit silly.
But It didn't wear its heart on its sleeve like that. I felt like it was kind of like a bit more prestigious than that. And then when you realise, oh, it's an exploitation bit. It was kind of like I really like Brawl on Cell Block 99. But it's sort of like that reminds me of Phantom Thread.
Yes.
Where I was just happy watching a period drama. We were talking about this the other week.
Yeah.
I was just happy watching a period drama about a guy that makes dresses.
Yes.
And I thought that was incredible. And then when it changes up a gear, it's just like you go, oh, it's like this. And it's like, no, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. But I could have watched another 2 hours of him making dresses.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of weird. But I think that when you get into sort of foreign films, they have less of a problem with sort of like mixing up genres because it's kind of like...
Yeah.
They're just like tools, aren't they?
I think you've got to properly invest in...
As in...
it's like Top Gear, this.
As in, they're just... all the different genres are like tools that you can play with and you can sort of play, mix them up. What do you think of Snowpiercer?
I like it. I do like it. I think it's one of those... Like, I really liked Parasite, but the way I hear people talk about it is almost like they found it mind-blowing. And I think it's a great film, but it was almost like, oh, yeah, no, I sort of would have expected this from his other film. Do you know what I mean? It's much more like, it feels like the people that are coming to it completely naive of anything are the people that it's really blowing their mind.
Yeah, but who are those people?
I don't know. Like, it just feels like that's who's really... It feels like, oh, yeah, but it's not that dissimilar from a lot of
but
what he does before.
But the host has been on terrestrial TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great. That's it. And I don't want to... I'm not taking away from it because I think it's Parasite's great. But it is like a similar kind of... It's like another film by the guy that did... Like, it's like if you're watching it and it's like, this guy did The Host, you watch it going, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. It's that sort of, you know, it's like a sort of... Not quite kind of Hitchcocky thriller, but it's more like... I mean, the stuff it sort of feels most like now is, I guess, something like... He was kind of doing it a bit before, but I guess like a Jordan Peele film. It sort of has that sort of twisty-turny,
right.
But it's very character-driven. It's not like... and I think that's the big bit, isn't it? You've just got to be very good at doing the character stuff. Like, I think the best thing like that recently that we speak about a lot on here is Thunder Road, which I think managed to be kind of heartbreaking and really funny. We're like side by side all the time,
yeah.
In that way that you'd think that's such a hard thing to juggle and such a tightrope to walk, and like every scene could be like you'd like be really laughing and then you'll be going, oh god, when you sort of realise the consequence of what you're laughing at a lot of the times.
Yeah, and but also when you talk about good acting and good character work and then genre splicing, you know, you can't really overlook John Carpenter's The Thing, that mixes perfectly science fiction and horror.
Good point.
So we're going to play a song now.
Good point.
And here it is.
Somebody left their keys in the ignition. I saw the
on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, you absolute... Oh, hang on. Hello, you absolute bell-end legends. This show is the governor. I listen to it when I can, and I'm not too busty. What do you think of all the storms we've had recently, Reg? Don't waste our time, Reg.
The storms?
The storms.
Hey, see my tweet the other day. Deserve more.
What?
I said, Storm Dennis, isn't that the one that said Donald Trump had a tiny dick? But didn't really do anything. didn't really do much. Deserve more.
Hello, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. I need something to do this arvo. Do you have any suggestions, Bibby?
Bibby? that suggests that they're Australian.
Where do you live?
Australia, probably.
No, we don't know where she lives.
She says arvo.
But I just think, but you can have Australian people that live in London.
Yeah, sure.
But we are in London, but we also have an international reach. I mean, I know John's listening. Mm. I hope he's listening.
I think you should.
I hope he's all right. I'll one listener from America.
Yeah, is he all right? You're out there, John?
Actually, this is quite an interesting thing, and by interesting, I mean desperate. We're going to give out a prize to the person that is our furthest listener.
Oh, yeah.
So if you just write in and tell us where you're listening in from, this is basically the people at FUBAR won't tell us how many people listen to our show. We have no idea. We ask every week, and for some reason, it's a big secret.
Actually, so, do we know? Have we got a...
Do we know? No. It could. So if you all just write in and tell us...
If everyone writes in and says that I listen...
Everyone that listens to the show, like Spartacus, if everyone writes in and says that they're listening to the show, then we'll get, an idea, and then we can kind of, create better content for you.
Because it's only like this, because we assume that it's just me and Nick.
It's just us.
This is what we talk about.
If we actually believed that anyone was listening, we would up our game. We would do research. We'd certainly read up on our guests before they came on. We'd do... I mean, Jim Cummings was the best interview purely because we spent a week watching all of his stuff.
Yeah. Everyone says it's very good.
Very good. Hello, how are you? Okay, so what are you doing this afternoon, Beb? So I think... I think if you're in London, go to the Natural History Museum or go to the National Portrait Gallery. But then while you're there, you're right next to Leicester Square and Soho, so visit a prostitute.
Hey, you can do that anywhere.
Get wanked off in one of them massage parlours and then go for a Chinese. that's what I would do. And by what I would do is what I will do. Afternoon. I very much enjoyed your rice chat.
Who didn't?
Even though it is clearly couscous for the win.
Oh,
you're a fucking arsehole. Wayne, you're a fucking arsehole. Couscous. Fucking hell.
Jesus
Christ, I've heard some fucking shit in my time, but fucking couscous. Fucking hell. Oh.
I'm rather partial to a feast ice poppy lolly. Nice poppy lolly.
I'm rather partial to a feast ice poppy lolly.
An ice poppy lolly.
Is it an ice pop lolly that he's trying to say?
Yeah, I'd just say ice lolly.
Oh, hang on. Reg isn't really busty, right? Reg is busy.
Busy.
It's all coming clear. Right. Okay, so afternoon. I very much enjoyed your rice chat. Even though it is clearly couscous for the win. You're a wanker, Wayne. I'm rather partial to a feast ice poppy lolly. I've got an album. I've put my albums, record collection in a different part of my...
Flat. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I rediscovered an album I had by the maestro Wayne King. I'm rather partial to a feast ice poppy lolly. What are your favourite lollies, Solero?
I like a Zoom. I like. I quite like that blue one. You'll like this. That's like bubblegum flavoured. What's that one that's just totally blue?
I don't know.
Okay, I like that one. I do enjoy a nice lolly.
I like the plastic cones that you used to get with the bubble gum in the bottom.
Oh yes, please.
And the rest is ice cream. It's like what is it? It's like raspberry ripple, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was always a good one. And but Solero for me at the moment. But you cannot beat a Calippo on a hot day.
Oh, you can't. Problem with the Calippo is, with me eating Calippo,
it keeps dropping
it
out.
It melts too much, and you spill it down your face. You
your
have that?
Face?
Yeah, do you know when it melts too much, so you go to drink it and you've got to do that thing where you're squeezing the bottom to get it out, then just, there'll be a point where it just melts too much, and when you do that, it just totally falls.
No, just my body temperature melts it, really. And but I do have a hot anus. So that's... It's almost inedible after...
Almost.
Come on. Waste not, want not.
We got some Valentine's last week, and we're so
totally Caribbean crushing on you. Oh look, I've got a fucking to Nick. Lots of love. *? Kiss, kiss, kiss. Hope you get lucky this Valentine's.
Cheesy Valentine's card.
That's someone that is so in love with me that they just want me to go out and fuck someone. Just, I love you, Nick. I love you so much. Please, I hope you go out and have sex with someone. That's how much I love you.
That's a nice thing.
That's a lovely sentiment.
I've got one. But to be honest, because I've turned up in the same parcel, it suggests that we've both got the same Valentine.
It's the same person.
The same person.
What have they said to you?
They've said, I hope you get lucky this Valentine's as well.
Oh, come on. They know we're going to be right next to each other. I know. They're trying to hook us up.
Oh, no.
Well, it's never going to happen, guys. Hang on, I know.
it's a popular thing, of course. Yeah, because I think there's probably websites, aren't there, that write fan fiction about this.
It's never going to happen. He respects me too much.
Do you want some bean boozled?
No,
jelly beans.
I'm doing really well with my diet.
Oi, I don't even know if I could eat these.
I've only got two more weeks.
These are these jelly beans that basically
taste like snot.
They basically taste of like horrible things. So one of them is...
Have you got a coin? I want to do my scratch
milk.
Card.
I don't think I could do it this week. I've had...
Have you got a coin?
Have you not
got any
coins?
Because
you
feel ill. I haven't got any coins. I gave them all the way to a homeless man.
There you go. There's 2p.
2p?
Yeah, keep it.
I put that on my head. And it's a 2p.
Let's see if we're going to win. So you got your scratch card?
I don't know what the rules for this.
We should know, shouldn't we? So we need to make sure we don't...
So this afternoon, go and see Birds of Prey.
Yeah, why not? Or why don't you listen to the...
What's out this week?
The big movies. Greed, the new Coogan film's out this week. I can't think what else is out. What was the other thing I was going to mention? Yeah, we've both been given scratch cards. I've got a National Lottery Lucky Bonus one. And do we have to do a row each time?
Are they really complicated?
How to play. In a row, find three symbols in the same order as displayed in the prize table to win the corresponding prize. So that's the prize table there. So I think you'd basically take
what's
it all
the
off, right?
Table?
And then see if it matches that.
Where's,
that prize
where's the
table.
Fucking prize table?
That one.
Oh,
so
right,
if they match that, I think, at the side.
So I've got a horseshoe, a seven, and a horseshoe.
Is that one?
No.
Oh, man. So we're doing some scratch cards. Live gambling. Although, is it gambling, technically, if you've been gifted them?
No.
Because this is like a... Hang on. What have I got here?
Oh, I mean, I don't have any of these other symbols. I've only got pound signs and... Okay, let's... Okay.
Right, have I won anything?
I haven't done my bonuses yet, though.
I've got nothing. None of this is even... hang on, I've got two horseshoes... And a safe? No, that's not it.
I've got a key and two horseshoes. No.
No.
I've got a coin, a horseshoe and a stack. No.
None of these are even remotely...
No. I mean,
like
there are pictures on here that...
I don't even correspond to the
prize
table.
The pictures out here that... Hang on.
What's my bonus balls?
So, what's... So,
I don't know. I've said something £2, £5.
Win £4.
I've got a thing that says wallet £2 and one that says ruby £5. Does that mean I've got £5 or £2?
And I've got... What's that?
Bonus, find. Super bonus, find a...
What does that mean?
To win a prize. Have I won it?
I've got a briefcase of £20. And I've got... find a... Oh, it's got to be a...
This is good radio, isn't it?
I don't understand what that is.
Don't really get this. Super bonus, find a... a player can win up to 9 free symbol bonus finder. But you need that. So why did it say £5 in it if I haven't got £5?
I think I've got £4.
Have you?
Yeah.
What have you got there? Let's have a look.
I think I've won £4 actually.
That's all right. We've done all right then.
That's your 2p bet.
Thank you.
And I don't think you won £2.
Blimey.
I think I almost won £20, but I didn't.
We'll never be.
So you went to see Birds of Prey. You went to see. What did you see? It's called Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey.
Yeah, when I saw it, it was called that. Harley Quinn.
Because they changed the name right at the last minute.
They changed the name after it came out.
No.
Yeah, they changed it like a week after it came out. They changed the name.
No.
Yeah.
Because it was doing that badly.
I think it was doing badly enough that people thought that was why people weren't going, or
they were
confused by it.
They should have called it Suicide Squad 2.
Yeah, they probably should have done, yeah.
That's weird, isn't it? Oh, why would you? I mean, surely that makes it even more confusing.
Because telling people it's not doing very well, isn't it?
Birds of Prey is still in the title.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, what it essentially is, it makes more sense because it is a Harley Quinn film.
Yeah.
With other characters in it. So it's not really a Suicide Squad film.
No.
It's a spin-off. And they've done basically what they did in the comics. The main thing of it, and it makes sense to have done it, is that it's the comics now, it's very much like DC Comics' equivalent of Deadpool. So what they're essentially doing is a Deadpool movie where she's breaking the fourth wall.
Is she?
Yeah, yeah.
It's in the film?
Yeah, but like in a kind of, probably quieter than in Deadpool, but she'll look to camera a bit and she's kind of narrating the thing.
Oh, really?
So it's a bit more in tone than something like that. It's R-rated. Maybe Suicide Squad was as well, was it?
No.
So it's got Effin and Jeffin in it.
Suicide Squad was, the reason why Suicide Squad was such a big hit was because it was PG-13 in America. And people could go back to it over and over again without taking their parents. And that's what they did.
So I think
in England, whereas if it's an R rating, you can be an 8-year-old, but you have to be accompanied with a parent.
Right.
It's
okay.
A PG, basically.
Yeah.
An R rating is a PG, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like Robocop is an R rating.
Oh, yeah, so you just have to have parents with you, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's great. But that's in the 50s and 60s. Someone pointed out that in here, the Hammer movies were X certificate that meant you had to be like I think 17 to go and see them, and in America they were essentially like PGs. You could take loads of kids saw them, whereas over here they were very much for adults.
Well, that's like an 18 certificate.
Mm, yeah, that's the equivalent of.
But the rating system is really weird in America, where it will affect, you know, the fact that you've got an R-rated superhero film and it's a success. They're so scared of R ratings, mm-hmm. And it's kind of, well, why? Because we have 15s and 18s over here.
Yeah.
And does that affect everything that drastically?
I suppose with something like that, they would probably be worried to do that. But I guess what it is, it's trying to do what Deadpool did, essentially.
Sure. But when you do, Yeah, an R-rated, but I mean, so James Gunn is doing Suicide Squad 2 at the moment, isn't mm-hmm. he? And that's an R-rating.
Okay.
And they're kind of, but basically he's just going to...
Do Guardians of the Galaxy again, isn't he?
No, I don't think so. Because Guardians of the Galaxy is a PG-13.
Oh, yeah.
It's a family film, whereas James Gunn...
Is a trauma. He comes from trauma.
He wrote Tromeo and Juliet, and he directed, what was the... Rainn Wilson film where he was the wrench super.
Yes.
That's fucking, I mean, that's dark. You know, it's funny. I think it's good, but there's some absolutely grotesque, you know, and that's basically what he's going to do. He's got like the Suicide Squad and he's going to kill some of them off horrifically. Basically, there's something like 30 super villains in Suicide Squad. And most of them aren't going to make it past the opening credits.
I mean, that's what they should have done in the first place, though.
Sure. So Harley Quinn is not actually in the Suicide Squad, is she?
In the sequel?
In the comics.
She is now, but kind of post the movie. They kind of put her in. She wasn't really.
No.
But the Suicide Squad can kind of be any villains, really. It doesn't really matter.
Mm.
They can kind of, because the idea is that they might get killed off, so they have to have a fairly high admission rate.
And is it just Batman villains or is it DC villains?
DC villains,
right?
Captain Boomerang is in the first Suicide Squad.
So
it's
where's
very much
he from?
A Flash villain.
Oh, Flash villain, right, okay.
So it's all like that kind of stuff, you know. They're like, so it's a mixture of baddies that just get sent out on missions.
Yeah, should have been a much better film.
Yeah, great idea, great concept.
I think even without knowing anything, I've watched one Suicide Squad animated movie, and even knowing what I know, I think I could have written a better one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's really obvious, isn't it? I know we spoke about this, but, like, it is a really obvious format to do the film.
Well, he's
just do the film.
He's even said that he wishes that he'd made Joker the main villain. Yeah, of course you should have.
Well, everyone, it also sold it on that as well, right? That was the whole kind of...
Well, they said the Joker was in it, but, like, I don't know, but, like, of course you should have done it, because most of the... One of them's got a boomerang, and he's fighting a witch, and... Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like...
But the Joker's the one that everyone knows.
Doesn't have any superpowers. He's just a supervillain,
yeah.
Right? So if you're fighting the Joker, it is technically possible to win. But when you're an all-powerful witch fighting a man that looks like a crocodile, and that's his only gift, he's just a bit strong... It's kind of like, then that's not a fair match.
No.
And there's 12 of them, and why aren't they all, you know, it's a suicide mission. They should have all died.
Or, like, I think, does any of them die?
One of them dies right at the beginning.
Right.
But he's the only one that's not introduced in the film.
Yes, yeah.
So there's kind of like, they all introduce all of the characters in Suicide Squad, like, really, it takes like 45 minutes to introduce all the characters. And then after they've done all of that, one guy just turns up and he goes, hi. And they all go, hi. And then 2 minutes later, he's dead. And you go, well, there was no suspense in that. You should have introduced him like everyone else.
Yeah.
And then when, you know, it's just like, it's just such poor filmmaking.
Yeah. But just, yeah, it just doesn't work on any level, really.
It's rubbish. I walked out of it, but I have since seen the end. Rubbish.
It is rubbish. And I'd say this Harley Quinn film, it's not really for me, but it's sort of fine. Better than Suicide Squad. It's not like it's got that same sort of aesthetic that Suicide Squad has, and you sort of really go, I don't really like this. Sort of very 90s kind of. It's like, sure, it's like, but I'm not a big fan of Deadpool either, to be honest, and that's the nearest thing, that's its nearest comparison, I think.
Sure. Well, that's weird that they've done that. Well, it's understandable that they've done that, but
totally. I get it completely. Makes sense that they need. That's what they want, and it's sort of successful in what they're trying to do. I think, but it's just not unsuccessful in finding an audience for it.
Mm.
I think it totally makes sense that they've gone, we want a bit of that. We want a bit of that, a slice of that money.
Is Ewan McGregor good?
He's fine. Yeah, he's fine.
Mm.
But again, it's one of those things where it feels a bit like. Like, the stylistically, aesthetically, it feels very 90s. And even the whole thing of it feels quite 90s. And Ewan McGregor's in it, and he's playing Black Mask, a villain. But, of course, like, because he's Ewan McGregor, he spends 90% of the movie without wearing a mask, and then puts a mask on for 5 minutes because they went, well, we can't have you wearing a mask in that film. Because, yeah, Ewan McGregor. And so it's a bit of that as well.
But in the comics, like, he's always wearing a mask.
Yeah, he just put the mask on, wouldn't he? He's called Black Mask. He wears a black mask. Whereas in this, it's like, at the end, it's like, I better put me a black mask on then. It's all like that. And you go, yeah, because you don't want to have him not wearing it because you've cast a star.
Yeah, but they did that with Oscar Isaac in X-Men Apocalypse. They put so much makeup on him, you couldn't tell it was him. And it was kind of like...
He looks like he's from, like, Lazy Town or one of those.
It's just like, but that's Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
It's terrible makeup
it's terrible.
As well.
Yeah.
It's so bad. That film is fucking atrocious.
Oh, yeah, they are. The last couple of X-Men films are like, as I'm watching them, I'm deleting them from my memory. Do you know what I mean? There's a happening. It's like, don't worry. Delete.
It's weird, isn't it? Because Days of Future Past, I haven't seen Days of Future Past, but Days of Future Past was like a complete return to form. Bryan Singer had made like... Bryan Singer, but he'd made like this great X-Men film. And then he followed it up. It felt like almost straight away.
Yeah.
Like there was maybe like a year in between. Yeah. And then X-Men Apocalypse came out and everyone said it's dreadful.
Yeah.
The only good bit in it is the bit that rips off Days of Future Past when he's doing the slow motion running.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or he's doing the fast running and whatever. But, I don't know, it's weird. But Oscar Isaac, fucking hell. Unrecognisable. So if you were... Oh, I watched Three Amigos and Suspiria this week.
Good double bell.
Wasn't it?
I haven't seen Three Amigos in too long, actually. I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
It's really good.
I bet.
It's really good. Like, Steve Martin's good in it. And Martin Short's good in it. But Chevy Chase is incredible in it. I think it's one of the few films where you actually can really tell what he's actually trying to do.
Yeah.
I've said this before, but I just think that I don't get it. I don't get Chevy Chase's act. It's just like, I don't think he's particularly funny.
Yes.
So I guess it's sort of like his whole attitude, and he's meant to be sort of like, what, smarmy? Or
yeah.
He's meant to be like really suave and kind of like...
Because that is it, because he is one of those people who's quite good looking, and that's why you could see that... He was the most obvious person to become a movie star in a way that you go, oh, yeah, he's like a good-looking guy. He looks like he could be like a film star.
He's very good-looking. But also he does like pratfalls and stuff like that. So he's like, he was really good at slapstick. But he doesn't do any of that in Caddyshack.
Mm.
So it's kind of like, what is your...
He's like a straight man in Caddyshack.
I just don't get it. And then all of a sudden in National Lampoon's... even that balance is a little bit weird. It's just like, I don't know how I'm meant to feel about this character, because he's not just like a dumb dad taking his family out. He's obsessed with this woman in a red sports car. And it's kind of like really pervy as well. It's kind of like, are we meant to be like going, Chevy Chase is this good looking bachelor who fancies this woman in a red sports car? Because he's sort of cheating on Beverly D'Angelo, and we all like her. Yeah, so it's just kind of like it's just sort of like a. But I think they nail it with Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, he's just trying. He's someone who's trying to give everyone the best Christmas.
And I really get that. But then when they did what's that in Three Amigos, he's playing an idiot, and you go, he's so good at this. He's like this. He's slightly vain, but I think he's too dumb to be vain.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's just kind of like, and that is, he's like playing an idiot too. Well, they're all idiots, aren't they? But but Steve Martin is kind of like the guy that doesn't realise he's an idiot.
I think that again, we keep plugging this book. It's a very good book. That Wild and Crazy Guys book does suggest that Chevy Chase is someone who's very poor at choosing his own projects.
Yeah.
And it's usually other people that are saying, like, he's doing someone a favour, like, come and do this one, Chevy, you'll be good at this. It's almost like he needs a third party to go, this is what you should be doing.
Well, he will turn down loads of other stuff, and then Dan Aykroyd will say, can you be in Nothing But Trouble? And he'll be, yeah. And then he'll instantly regret it, and he'll hate doing it. And, you know, just an odd career, because it's almost like he hadn't really proven himself as a comedic actor after Saturday Night Live, and he went straight into doing dramas. And it's kind of like, well... And why the fuck did he make that dog film? It's a mental career. Yeah. And you go, you know, he doesn't have a Ghostbusters. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
Although, I guess, the vacation movies...
His biggest, I guess.
Are his biggest things. But it was like, fucking crazy, really. But he's so good in Three Amigos. He's better in Three Amigos than he is in any of his other films. And, it's just a really funny film. And Suspiria, obviously... The thing is, the visuals on Suspiria. I'll wrap this up real quick, and then we'll get our guest on. But the visuals on Suspiria are incredible. But the soundtrack by Goblin, if you took off the soundtrack, it's literally there's music, and it's really sort of like pounding and kind of like really intense. But there's like this like wailing and screaming that's going all over the soundtrack. And even if it's just sort of like a picture of sort of like a blue room with lightning, as soon as you hear all of that, it's just sort of like automatically intense.
I saw that when I was about 15 for the first time, and I saw it at the BFI South Bank NFT1. And I saw it and I went in and I found it the most unsettling thing I'd ever seen. Yeah. Like straight away, I sat down to watch it, didn't really think anything, and then it was like my heart was like pounded in my chest, and I just felt so unsettled. And it's the music, and it's like something is wrong here.
The dubbing adds to it, I think, rather than you going, fucking hell, they've all dubbed.
It creates a world where it's you just in your head, you're going, there's something not right about any of this.
The original Suspiria, by the way. Yeah. It's really, I just think it's incredible. But what the first time it occurred to me was this time was just that they would have obviously filmed it without the soundtrack. They would have filmed it without the Goblin score, and then they would have scored it after the film, maybe. Or maybe they'd have recorded some bits of music for him to film with. I know Sergio Leone used to get Ennio Morricone to score the film first. Yes. Or like write music for the film, and then he would play it on set to get the timing right. So maybe because Dario Argento and Sergio Leone were kind of like contemporaries, and they used to work together. In fact,
he wrote
in that example was "Once Upon a Time in the West," and Dario Argento wrote that. Mm. So it's kind of like, I don't know how it would have worked, but can you just imagine just filming all of those shots without that, without the music?
Without knowing it was going to be there.
And then going, well, we've got this film. A lot of it doesn't... I guess a lot of it wouldn't have worked. Mm-hmm. And then you give it to Goblin, they put the soundtrack on. And
it's a big sound design film, that bit where she's in the thing at the start and you've got the doors opening and closing
the airport opening is incredible. Like it's so intense. The bit when you see the woman running through the woods is fucking. But it's just such an intense, incredible film.
It's just constantly telling you this isn't right.
And there's so much noise and sound, and then all of a sudden there's no noise and no sound. And then I just I love it.
Tremendous.
I love everything about it. I even love, like, 20 minutes before the end of the film, they all of a sudden get two scientists to come in and explain what the fuck you're watching. And then it's kind of like, and she sits down and says, so what are witches? And it's kind of like, and they sort of like go, well, this is the theory of the, and they're both dubbed. One of them is it
Udo Kier?
From, we talked about this off air though, from Brawl in Cell Block.
That's
99.
Also fan club.
The original Suspiria. The remake's fine, but I haven't really thought about it that much since I saw it.
Good.
But the original is great. What's your song that you're going to play? I'll guess it.
Yes.
So what's the song you're going to play?
The song I chose was... It was Bus Stop by the Hollies, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello. I haven't got my headphones on. What am I doing?
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Just so you know, sorry about that. I'm expecting a sideboard delivered in my flat, and I'm not in to obviously accept it. They were meant to deliver it on Wednesday, and then it was Thursday, and now it's today. And my friend is in the flat, but I've just realised that in doing the show, I've forgotten to set that up with the guy that's delivering it, and I think I've missed a call from him, so I'm slightly worried. I just have my phone out. Anyway, we're joined in the studio now by Josh Barrow. You are an actor.
I am.
Oh, I haven't put your microphone on. Talk.
I am.
Yes,
he's an actor.
He's an actor. He's an actor.
And you're currently in a play.
I am.
Called
yes.
Time and Tide. Mm-hmm. And it's at the Park Theatre.
The Park. Yep.
Is that the Finsbury Park one?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's lovely.
Park 90.
Where is that?
It's just basically by the station now,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's about 2 minutes walk from the station.
Is it near the bowling alley?
Yes, Rowan's it is, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Have you been to Rowan's?
I haven't yet, but my castmate Elliot is a big fan, so I think we're going to probably go at some point.
It's on the cards.
It's, yeah,
it's
yeah.
on the cards.
We filmed the last episode of, well, no, we the last day of filming Uncle was at Rowan's mm-hmm. in Finsbury Park, and... yeah, and we all went bowling afterwards. It was fun. It's really nice there. Mm. I grew up around Finsbury Park, but just have never known where the theatre is, and I know loads of people that have done plays there. Mm.
It's like quite a new theatre, I think. I don't think it's been there very long. Yeah, so it is quite new.
But it feels like it's got like quite a good pedigree already, right?
Oh,
of
definitely.
Stuff coming in. It feels like straight away, whenever you see something, it's like, oh, yeah, it's that one. It's the Finsbury Park one.
And they always get like some great names attached to the theatre, like when you go in there's always kind of pictures of like Juliet Stevenson, Ian McKellen around everywhere, so they've got kind of big following, big support from some decent names.
Have you got your photo up yet?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Yeah, have someone do that. Make some demands.
Yeah.
Hasn't Ian McKellen been to see you?
Ian McKellen hasn't, as far as I'm aware, but Stephen Fry came in the other night and he particularly enjoyed it. So yeah.
Did you meet him?
Sorry?
Did you meet him after?
I did, yes. Yeah, he came in and he came to visit the cast in the dressing room, so he had a word with him afterwards and we got a photo, so that was a pretty magical experience.
Do you get told when they're in?
Yes, well...
Before?
Yeah, we got told the night before because I think a lot of we're under the same... kind of feeling that if we saw him in the audience, we might just stop what we're doing
right.
and look at Stephen Fry for a bit. So.
Do you think that is... what do you prefer? Do you prefer knowing that people are there? Or not? I always prefer to know that there's an audience. do you prefer knowing if like Stephen Fry is in the audience? Or
I would say so, yeah. Uh-huh. Because I think... you've got time to process it. I think you've got time to be like... get over the initial like, oh my god, Stephen Fry's going to be in the audience, and then you kind of come to terms with it, I suppose, and then you just step out and you can do your thing, as opposed to standing on stage seeing him for the first time and then forgetting all your lines.
There's a there's a recording artist called Cunt and the Gang, and with a K.
Okay.
And he was in the audience once and I didn't know.
Mm.
And that threw me.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So his name's Wayne. He's from Southend. It's a niche act, but
I've seen him. I like him a lot. Very funny.
It did throw me.
Very funny. So now you've been doing it since. So the play is called Time and Tide.
It is. Yes.
You've been doing it since.
By James McDermott.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing it. Go on.
I was going to say.
I'm just trying to get all the info out.
And you've now got you're just about a week away from finishing.
We are
a week tomorrow.
Yeah, week tomorrow is the last show.
So now you're in it. How much is the play changing now? Or is it now completely set in and you... like, even though Stephen Fry could pop in, mm-hmm. you go, forget it, Stephen.
Yeah.
We're going to do exactly the same thing.
No. I mean, we're definitely playing with it now, I think. Like, we had our first week or so where, you know how it is, we're very much doing the blocking, what I've mm-hmm. been told, finding new things, kind of reading how the audience is reacting to it. And now we're at a stage now where we can, I think, try new things, play with it, keep it alive a little bit. We just don't want to step out and move here and then say this at the same point as we always say it.
How long was the rehearsal process?
3 weeks. Okay. Rehearsing at a place in Manor House. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And so, did you audition before Christmas then?
Yeah. I auditioned, I think it was on towards the end of November time last year. And I kind of came onto the project, but it had already kind of been developed at the park as part of the Script Accelerator program. So Elliot, the guy who plays Daz in the show, he was already on board, and I auditioned with Elliot, reading with him, and I think it was just a basic chemistry test, which for the audition, like a really kind of, which is a great way to do it. I really loved auditioning like that, because when else do you get to audition with the actual actor that you're going to be performing with?
I mean, I am awful at auditions. Mm. I just and I get so nervous and I hate them. But I just know that when we did chemistry tests for Uncle, I'd already been cast, and every time someone came in, I'd just go out of my way to make them feel comfortable. Mm. And then you get a much better performance out of them. And then you can actually get a true test of, oh, is this person right or not?
Also, would that make it easier? I'm not an actor, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I'd be great if I was in things, probably. Not so much. But I'd say the only time I've been for an audition, I walked up and couldn't remember what the word audition, and so said, "Hi, I'm here for those like job interviews that actors do," and I didn't get it.
No, fair enough.
But the process then, if you're doing like a chemistry test, does it also, I guess that also helps, that if you're doing something where you're constantly facing the possible rejection of not getting something, mm-hmm. if you're doing a chemistry test, does that also make that process easier, because you might just go, oh, I can see that might not work with that person or something?
Yeah, I suppose. I think because I initially read the script and I loved the character. And I thought the story was really, really strong, really well written. Because, like I say, it was pretty much developed before we went into the rehearsal room. So I kind of had an initial idea. But even the fact that it was my first audition, I went in, and that idea kind of altered a little bit, kind of bouncing off Elliot and kind of just trying new things and reacting off what he did and whatnot. So and that was my first audition, so that was like already I was finding out new things. Mm-hmm. So I just think it was such a great way to do it.
Mm. So are you straight from drama school, or are you kind of?
No, I'm not. I'm originally from Newcastle, you can probably tell.
There's a
bit of a twang there.
Yeah, now you said it.
Yeah. So I came down to London in 2017. I studied in Newcastle, I did a degree, and then I graduated in August, and then I came down to do a show with National Youth Theatre, which was called Zigga Zagga, and that was in August of 2017. And I was very fortunate to meet the agent that I'm now with through that show, and she signed me. And it's a very long, boring story, but I ended up basically sticking around in London, and I've been working ever since. So I'm very lucky in that.
That is very lucky. Yeah, good for you.
Thank you.
Really good for you. It's interesting what you're saying about the play sort of like changing slightly, like a house that's sort of like a new house that's sort of expanding and creaking and stuff. My friend Nick Payne wrote Constellations, mm-hmm. and
we studied that in college.
It's a good play,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
beautiful.
So I saw it with what's the woman out of that film?
Sally.
Oh, she's in the Shape
of Water. Hawkins.
Sally Hawkins. So I saw it was Sally Hawkins and Rafe Spall.
Yeah.
And I guess like the director or the writer hadn't been to see it for a while, and Rafe Spall was on stage, and he does this thing, you know, like in The Office, where Martin Freeman will look at the camera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was doing that with the audience, but there's obviously no camera. Right? So he would like be breaking the fourth wall and just sort of like looking at it. And I went out for like a drink with Nick, and I was just like, oh, it's really interesting that he breaks the fourth wall. And he was just like, oh, is he doing that again? So he had to keep coming in and reining him in and saying, stop breaking the fourth wall. It was such an odd thing to do, because it's the sort of thing that you will see in one of those kind of like documentaries actually sitcoms. Mm. They're like weird, really weird. Weird decision. But yeah, that's interesting that it all changes over time. Mm-hmm.
So was this something that you were always destined to do? Is this all you've ever wanted to do?
I never really know how to answer this question when people ask us it, because I used to, when I was a kid, I loved films, and I used to write film reviews when I was about 11 or 12. And I used to write I used to be a youth film critic for a local website called My Cramlington, and then so that through that I kind of started watching more films. I started watching it and I was like, this is really good. Why is this really good? Because the people in it are really good. So then I decided I wanted to do drama for GCSE, and so I did. And then I joined a local theatre group in my hometown Blyth called the Phoenix Theatre, and I think it was from then, really, I was just like, this is everything that I want to do. And because I also write as well, so if I can like balance writing and acting.
I think that is the key. If you can write, if you want to be an actor and you can write, then you're never going to kind of like be sat there waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
You know, you've always got something to be getting on with. That's it. You can always take your career in your own hands. But if you just act, then you're kind of at the whim and the mercy of other people deciding.
I always think that, like people like Nick or other kind of people that come from comedy, it's like you probably have more of a say of your own career than most people, because you both have a backup where you can always say, well, I can always work. I can always go back on stage and do something. Mm-hmm. So it's always you always got that element of being able to do performance, and you can always just write for yourself. And do a gig that night somewhere.
And that's it. I think, because that's what MIT taught us as well. Because I did a course for, it was about a month-long course at Goldsmiths University. And I think the main thing that I learned from that was, like, it's so much fun to just develop something with people who want to develop something as well. It sounds so kind of minimal, but it means so much to you. Hmm. When you've got an idea and you talk about that idea, and then somebody else actually gives you another idea that you never even thought of. I love that. I love that whole thing.
That's the thing. I mean, so from a stand-up point of view, it's quite a lonely thing where you're coming up with your own ideas, you're generating everything yourself, and you have to get really nervous off the side in a club, and then you have to go on stage by yourself and entertain a whole room for people, and you come off by yourself and you go home by yourself. Mm-hmm. Not always. And then... it's one of those things where it's kind of like, and then... I think with acting as well, it can kind of like you're preparing by yourself and then you're going in. And sometimes on film sets, it's kind of like it can be quite confrontational at some points, or it can be kind of like very isolating where, because I come from a comedy background, so I would always tend to run through stuff with people before you do it.
Yeah.
But when you're on set, it's just kind of like everyone's got to know their lines, and then all of a sudden, action, and then you're doing it.
Sometimes maybe you'll block take. It. Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, and kind of like you'll be chatting to someone, one of the other actors, and then all of a sudden, they haven't even looked at a script, they haven't done anything, and they're like, word perfect, and you're just like going, oh my God, you fucking...
actor.
Yeah. It was like, you've cheated me. You know, it's sort of like, I didn't realise, you know, it's like someone that says, oh, I haven't done any revision, and then they turn up and then they absolutely nail their exam, and it's just kind of like, you're just like... And so it's kind of like quite isolating. So I'm always erring. I find everything quite intimidating and scary and overwhelming. So I always... to the side of collaboration, where it's just kind of like, let's just do this together, and let's kind of like make it like a joint activity.
That's it. Because myself and my housemate and a couple of our friends, we run a company called Gutter Street, and we kind of kicked that off with a play that I wrote in September 2018. And then we do regular nights in Camden at the Green Note in Camden, just to kind of keep that kind of creative fire burning, just so we've got something to work towards. And then if one of us working, we can take a step back, and the other guys take the reins a bit more. And it's just there for something, so we've always got something to stimulate with. Mm-hmm. I think.
So what's that then? So when you say you've got a regular night, because again, I'm coming from a sort of comedy background of going. would that be the equivalent of like going to an open mic like or a new material night?
So what we do is kind of like a bi-monthly thing. They're called Gutter Street Nights, and we found the Green Nut in Camden. It was because my housemate and his girlfriend had gone to a gig there, and we saw this space, and we thought that it would be a kind of perfect evening for some new ideas.
What venue is this?
The Green Note in Camden.
Where is that?
Where is it? It's what's the street called? I'm so bad with like street.
Yeah, I have to say the street. Where? What shop is it near?
It's but you know what it is. It's about two doors down from the Dublin Castle. If you know where that is. Yeah.
Near opposite the Pizza Express.
I think so. I don't know what's going on around us half the time. Sure. But we do what the general premise is we get kind of six artists who are like actor, writers, poets, and musicians to write an original piece around a theme that we set. So, for example, on Monday we've got an evening coming up, and that theme is chances. So we say, write anything that you like around the theme of chances, and then they have complete free reign over that.
How did you come up with the names, the titles?
We just sit down, have regular meetings, and we just kind of plan the next few nights. And
you're not like taking words out of a hat.
No. It's just something that can. It's always something that can be quite broad, quite whatever this means to you. You create something from it, and then they come and they perform it, and we provide that space for them, and then we have a bit of a pub quiz, and then an open mic at the end of it. So if anybody is inspired by anything that they've seen or read, they can come up and they can just maybe jot a few lines down and just say, "I just wrote this," in the interval, and then perform it, and then it's really, really chilled out.
That sounds incredible.
Mm. It's cool.
I didn't really know that was even a thing that happened. No, I think of it like.
It's like, because it is like an open mic, but it's not a case of like people come down and like, oh God, like, okay, I'm on next. It's just they can get up if they want to, and then we might have like a couple of people who are like, we don't have any slots, but you can just come down if they want to play a song, bring your guitar. We always have a guitar on hand, so if anybody hasn't brought the guitar and they want to get up and play a song, then they can. It's just a really kind of nice, chilled out vibe, and so the next one is on Monday at the Green Note in Camden.
Will you not be on stage on Monday?
I will be. Okay. Unfortunately, I can't be at that one, but I am going to go from the theatre to Camden.
That
afterwards.
Sounds incredible. Good for you.
Thank you.
That's really good. I just think that's brilliant.
Yeah. What are the audiences like for that? Who comes along or is everyone there kind of in the arts or kind of creative person, or have you got people that are just, I'm just audience, I'm just here to watch it and experience it?
That's kind of what we were after. It started off as very much our mates came along and they supported, but then they started bringing their mates that we've never met before, and then they started telling others about it. So we started off, they've got a basement room, and I think at full capacity, including act, it's about 25. So overall, it can be about 10 to 15 people in the audience. So people just get up and do their thing. But then, because we managed to sell out those nights, they offered us the bigger room upstairs, which I think seats about 60. So, and we sold that out as well. So basically what we do is it'll kind of be 1 month we'll do a bigger event in the room, and that'll be like the Gutter Street's big event, and then we'll kind of do smaller events in downstairs. So we did a Halloween event last year, we did a Christmas event. The Christmas event was really cool. We did basically got five writers who've written forward before to retell a Christmas carol, and it was just... however they wanted to tell it, and they didn't have to stick to the story. It was just kind of stayed in the same vein as the themes. So there was a kind of future, present, past, mm-hmm. all of that, and like it got such a really, really lovely response.
And they are something you encourage audience along for. It's like, so if there are people listening, you'd love people to come along.
Absolutely, honestly, please do come down, because it's such a lovely night. And people who aren't even in the arts, because my housemate who runs it as well, he works at the Science Museum, and there's a big crowd who come down from the Science Museum, and they absolutely love it as well. So it's not just for people in the arts to come and just watch other people in the arts. It's for anybody who wants to come and just have a nice chilled out night, few drinks and a bit of banter.
That's great. That's like, but that's what I'm talking about, is like self-motivation and creating your own kind of like work and your own kind of taking control of what you're doing and not kind of like being dragged around.
And creating a sort of space where people can do something. Because I guess all these things are all things that could possibly develop into something else anyway, right?
But the arts is an industry where you do something, and at first when you do it, you're kind of like, you're in complete control because you're kind of making your way. And then as soon as you get to a certain stage, you become a commodity and people start telling you what you can and you can't do, sort of like using you in ways that you don't particularly think are fitting. And then it kind of like, you have to go back to kind of, you know, I know that when I do whenever I do like any filming or anything like that, it's always nice to go back to doing stand-up because it's kind of like, oh, I'm in control of the stand-up. Or write music, and it's just like, this is what I do. I write the music and I go off and I do it, and no one's kind of, and then as soon as you go into the idea of writing something for TV, or it's all about kind of like, well, how do you crop your idea in order to fit a certain audience or a certain genre or a certain time slot? And it's kind of, well, we're aiming at pre-Watershed on Channel 4, but you've also got to write a parallel treatment which is aiming at kind of like primetime BBC One, or it's going to be on Dave, or whatever. And it's just kind of like, you're constantly adapting your ideas to fill a criteria as opposed to just doing something that's sort of instinctive.
That's it. And I think with us, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about being at NYT and kind of working collaboratively with other people who just want to create, really, because the play that I wrote it, and then my housemate had wanted to direct it, and so that gave him the opportunity to do that, and then he's now written his own play. I'm not much of a director myself, but I'm kind of going to take like a production role on it, kind of, that's something that I've never done before. So within this company, we're still kind of exploring like just different things that we've never tried before in the industry that we want to do, so we can kind of recognize what people who work so hard in this industry are doing and kind of gain an appreciation for that. Even though it might not be our jobs, we can look and respect people for what they are doing.
So is that, what do you have like a plan? Or I suppose you can't really have a plan, can you? Because you're just sort of, but do you know things you want to be doing in 2 or 3 years' time, or what you've kind of got to?
We've got some ideas of what we'd like to do. We'd ideally like some premises at some point. I think that's like kind of like further down the road. And we just want to keep going at the rate we're going at the minute, because, like I say, we're selling out these venues, and we just want to write more, kind of create a bit of a season, and just expand our ideas on how we can help people create something and give them a platform from which to create it, I think.
And how do people find out about these nights? Do you have like a website?
We're building a website at the moment. Okay. My girlfriend is a stage manager. She's designing our website alongside my housemate, and we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Okay. So anybody can give us a follow. It's Gutter Street. So and Gutter Street Productions.
Why are you called Gutter Street?
Well, when we were marketing the play originally, it was just everywhere was asking for a name. We couldn't just sell a play to people that wanted the venues wanted a company name. So it kind of goes back to an Oscar Wilde quote, which I'm probably going to misquote wildly and annoy people. But it's about we're all in the gutter, but we're all looking up at the stars.
Yeah. Right, right.
And we think that means so much because it is a place where people can feel at home, and because it came from a place where obviously we're all actors, we're all just trying to work, we're just trying to make our way in London, but we've still got our eyes on what we want to do, and that's the kind of ethos that we're trying to promote in it. So so Gutter Street just seemed like Gutter Street is the place where you come and sit and have a chat, or sit and write something, or you can just escape for a bit. Yeah.
That sounds great.
Thank you.
So you are massively into the Stone Roses, right?
I am.
You're wearing a Stone Roses t-shirt right now.
Yeah.
You're a fan of the Stone Roses. Mm-hmm. Your favourite song is Stone Roses, Made of Stone.
Made of Stone. That's right.
So we'll play that now, and then we'll chat to you about that.
It's always
on the verge of being slick.
and then it's really good though, I stumbled at the last hurdle, on the run up it sounded like a proper radio effect.
To that song, and then we'll talk to you about that.
Yes.
Fubar Radio.
We're back. That's not the Spanish one.
The Spanish one? Oh, Stone Roses.
No, they've changed our ident.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. So how old are you?
I'm 23.
23. Oh. So when did you come to the Stone Roses?
Oh, when I was probably about 17 or 18.
Okay. Yeah. I always find that interesting that they're such... To me, they're a band that are so of their time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but also... I was listening to Stone Roses when I was 17 or 18.
Yeah, we're all the same age.
So, but it's, do you know what I mean? It just makes you feel incredibly old, doesn't it? Yeah. It was, like, not to go on and on about it, but when we were making Uncle, the kid was sort of like just getting into music. When we started, he was 11, and then he was like 15 or 16 when we started doing it. And it was
crime
kind of like,
influence in age.
He was just like, oh, what sort of music are you listening to? And he said, oh, I've got my dad's old records. And you go, oh, yeah, what's that? He goes, Pulp. And you're just like, oh, my God. Because my dad's old records were Beethoven. old records. Yeah, sure. So, Stone Roses, how did you first get into them?
I think it was just because I really loved that whole kind of Manchester scene, that kind of that influence that they had on music. So I really enjoyed listening to. I think I had my mum had the Best of the Stone Roses, so she had that on CD, and I think I just grew up listening to these songs,
right,
and then not really appreciating it until actually listening to the sound that they created.
What was their second album called? Do you know?
I can't remember.
Was
that the one with Love Spreads?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it called Love Spreads?
I don't...
Is the album called Love Spreads? I don't... What's it called? Second Coming.
I did
a film that's coming out soon. Called Love Spreads,
mm-hmm.
and we filmed it at Rockfield Studios, where mm-hmm. they recorded the second album, and it took them like 2 years to record, like 18 months, where they were all in this little converted farm in the middle of nowhere, where basically they recorded Bohemian Rhapsody there, the song.
Oh, right, okay.
And there's a wall that apparently Noel Gallagher was sat on, and then he wrote Wonderwall based on it. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's this like, it's in the middle of nowhere in Wales with all these rolling green hills, and it's this all of these barns are converted into recording studios, mm-hmm. and then there's sort of like this accommodation place where you've got kind of like a dining room with like 8 bedrooms that all come off it,
mm-hmm.
and and we filmed there, and it was where the Stone Roses spent 18 months trying to write their second album. It's a nice place there.
I've just realised we have been speaking a lot about the Gutter Street stuff, but we haven't really spoken a lot about the play, which was your main reason for coming in.
What's the play about?
Time and Tide?
Yes. Time and Tide about?
Yes, it's about set in a little cafe in Norfolk, and it's set on over the course of a day where all four characters are kind of experiencing their own individual change. So my character Nemo, he is kind of humming and hawing about going off to university because he's a Norfolk born and bred lad and he wants to go and tread the boards in London. He's an actor, and he's kind of best mate Daz is struggling with that. He's struggling with his best mate leaving, and also the owner of the cafe, May, she is kind of battling about moving to Suffolk or not, and kind of selling on her business, the business that she owned, she inherited from her mom, and she's worked there all her life. And then there's Ken, the bread man, who kind of he's coming to terms with his own feelings, and this is the day that he's going to act on those feelings. So it's about a kind of change and influence that these characters have on each other to bring them back down to earth, almost. Like, because it's very easy to overthink these things, overthink these big decisions, but you need the people around you to be able to go, this is what's best for you. And I know you're going to, it might be difficult, but it's, you can only grow from it.
So it's like a crossroads play. So it's everyone at the crossroads, and it's the day where it all...
Yeah, it all kind of comes to a head. Mm-hmm. So it's a really sweet script. I think there's some beautiful relationships in it. Yeah.
Good.
And this runs till the 29th?
The 29th of February.
What is the date today?
The 21st.
21st, right. I've got no idea. I've got no idea. I have to keep double checking. It feels like the year has gone by so quick. That's what happens when you get old. Time.
This is what it's going to be like, Josh.
March is on.
This is what it's going to be like in two years' time for you. This is where we are.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Sure. So you're a fan of Trainspotting? Is that the film, the book, or the play?
All of the above.
Oh, right, yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Is there one play, or is there, or do people constantly adapt it? Because I've seen Trainspotting as a play.
Yeah.
But I can't, and I think I've seen it more than once, maybe, but I can't remember whether it was the cast that was different or the fact that the entire play was different.
I think people tend to go off the Harry Gibson adaptation. Right. So that's like the one script that actually, I believe that came out before the film.
Yeah,
there was definitely one that was like, because it was a big play at that time, I remember. I think the play, isn't it? Is it Ewan Bremner who's Renton?
Ewan Bremner plays Renton. Yeah, that's right. And then he obviously got brought on as Spud.
I think he was gutted at the time, wasn't he? I think there was a big thing at the time that he was like, can't believe it.
What did you see Trainspotting 2?
Yeah, I loved it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Were you not a fan?
No.
Oh, fair enough.
I know people that do love it.
Yeah, because I think it complements the first film so well. It's like, it's not kind of, I don't think, they could have made it quite contrived, but I think it is just these... It looks obviously very different to the first one. I think the charm of the first one is the kind of ruggedness of it.
Yeah.
And this one is a bit like, obviously a bit more, but I think it's changed with the times, and I think that's a massive theme running through it, and I think they captured that really, really well.
My friend who I went to see it with is like a huge fan of Irvine Welsh, huge fan of the film, huge fan of the soundtrack, huge fan of the book, huge fan of the play, and he went to see Trainspotting 2 and he really loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sat with him and I just came out of it going, I didn't enjoy that. And then he was just like, oh, but it was incredible. So maybe I need to sort of give it another work. Maybe at the time there was sort of like a lot of hype around it, and it's kind of difficult to... Because it's like, Trainspotting was such a huge film when it came out.
I quite like Trainspotting 2. I haven't seen it since. Mm. And I guess it is a film about people who are 48 or whatever. It's a lot. They're a lot different, much different kind of thing. I think the thing I found a bit like jarring about it was when they try and do like... their version of the scene from the first one, and it's almost like, why would that happen again? Or it's like, we'll do that bit from the first one again, but now they're older.
It
has that constant kind of like almost that running joke of like,
I just think it was a nostalgic film. That was like the running theme of nostalgia running through it, and that was like, and I suppose if you could find it quite jarring if it's like, oh, is it nostalgia for the fans as well, who like are just watching a duplicate of the scene that they loved so much in the first one. But I think if they hadn't like cut it with different stills from even when they were younger, from the time of the first film, even when they were kids, it was like that is a constant theme that's running through it. So I think it does play into that kind of vibe as well. Which I love.
You've definitely got a thing for the 90s, haven't you?
Yeah,
it's very 90s.
I know, because, I watched Trainspotting when I was about 11 for the first time, and I loved it. It was like, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is something else. I've never seen a film like it. And then I read the book years later, and I think ever since, because there's five in the series now, so there's like, I've read all of them. I'm a massive fan of Irvine Welsh as well.
So what are the five? There's Trainspotting Porno.
Trainspotting Porno, Skag Boys, and then Blade Artist.
Skag Boys is almost like... it's almost like a Irvine Welsh spoof.
Yeah.
Skag Boys, I think... Like I've got a lot of love for Trainspotting, and I love the book as well. I do think Skag Boys is possibly one of the best books I've ever read in my life.
Oh, okay.
It is incredible.
And then so there's...
So Skag Boys, The Blade Artist, and then Dead Men's Trousers, and that closes it.
Right.
That's a great title, actually.
Yeah.
But a lot of those must have been written quite recently then.
I think The Blade Artist and Dead Men's Trousers were quite recently, but I mean, obviously he's done a lot in between that.
But there's also stuff that sort of he's got sort of like a shared universe, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Where,
yeah,
where there are references to other things that don't necessarily directly. Because when Trainspotting 2 was being made, everyone thought it was going to be, oh, it's they're going to write
do
porno.
Do porno, yeah.
But that's not what it. That's not what it is. They did a sequel. But also, they changed so much from the book to make it into a film, and so much from the play.
And in the movies, Keith Allen in Trainspotting is meant to be the guy from Shallow Grave, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, they said that at the time that he's meant to be. He gets the money at the end.
I never knew that.
And that's when, if you watch them in the reverse order, it's when he goes to Edinburgh to with the bag full of cash.
Oh, really?
Right.
Oh, that makes me...
Yeah.
It was one of those... Another thing regurgitated from Empire magazine from 1997.
That's really cool. I didn't know that. No. That makes me want to watch Shallow Grave again.
Mm-hmm. Great film, Shallow Grave.
Brilliant.
We should do the game, right?
Yeah, sure. Okay, we've got a game.
This is a game. The game is called Better or Worse, and you just have to say whether the next person I mention is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my own opinion. Okay. Beginning with Robbie Williams.
Okay.
Is Kristen Wiig better or worse than Robbie Williams, based on my opinion?
Worse.
Better.
Who's
better.
This? Sorry?
Robbie Williams.
I'm sorting out my cabinet.
Kristen Wiig.
Is Robbie Williams better or worse than Kristen Wiig?
Is Kristen Wiig better or worse than Robbie Williams?
Better. Robbie Williams has got banter.
No.
Yeah,
really. Oh,
come on.
You really do like the 90s.
You love the 90s too much. Too much. Kristen Stewart, better or worse than Kristen Wiig?
Worse.
Yeah, probably worse. Yeah. I quite like her. Patrick Stewart, better or worse than Kristen Stewart?
Better.
James Stewart, better or worse than Patrick Stewart?
Better. Yeah.
James McAvoy, better or worse than James Stewart?
Better.
Worse.
James McAvoy.
He's all right.
Hero.
He's sure he's fine.
Hero.
Ewan McGregor, better or worse than James McAvoy?
Oh, mate.
Better. No worse. They're both high cards.
They're both good.
Josh.
I'm going to say better. Yeah.
Paul Whitehouse, better or worse than Ewan McGregor?
Better.
Worse.
Better. Paul Rudd, better or worse than Paul Whitehouse?
Better.
Worse.
I'm not
Paul
doing very
Newman,
well,
Paul Newman, better or worse than Paul Rudd?
Paul Newman, better than Paul Rudd? Better.
Better, yeah, better. Yeah.
Gary Newman, better or worse than Paul Newman?
Worse.
Better.
Worse.
Worse.
I like a bit of Gary Newman.
Five. It's a high card.
Yeah, okay.
Five. Was
you
it
take
five?
That.
Five.
I'll take
oh,
that.
Right. Okay, well, do you know what? So you got
having
five.
Said that.
You got having five. That, so yeah. You join Original Flavour right at the bottom of the pile.
Am I last? Am I
last? You're joined last.
Oh, that's all right then.
You're not as good, unfortunately, as Tom Crowley, Rhys James, Martin Julius, Romesh Ranganathan with 9, Omar Alaboy, Paul Gannon, Nick Dissembly, and Naomi McDonald, Dan Schreiber, Jasmine Torres with 8, Kevin Allison, Joe DaCosta, Alistair Green, Lloyd Griffith, Max Halley, Harriet Kemsley, Kim Newman, Morgan McGlynn, Juliet Sear, The Last Skeptic, David Trent, David Williams, Mark Watson with 7, and Bronte Barbe, Jay Foreman, Will Jackson, and Ginger Johnson with 6. But you are right there with Original Flavour. Lovely boys.
There's a pride in being last. I'll take that.
Oh, okay. Do you know what? You've got another 4 slots, and also poor Sam Ashurst last year. I mean, what did he get?
Had a nightmare. Yeah, had an absolute nightmare doing the game.
Absolute nightmare. I think he was.
Did just panic.
-5.
I think he panicked something. Yeah, it's incredible.
He started answering things that we weren't even asking. It was absolutely insane. So congratulations with the game.
Thank you.
Right, so you're in. So you're on stage every night.
Tonight.
At the Park Theatre for the next 7 days.
Twice on Thursdays and Saturdays.
Twice on Thursdays and Saturdays. But how'd you find that?
That was great. That's fine. Yeah.
And you're doing what you love.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
Lovely to meet you.
Lovely
to talk
to you.
Welcome to the club. And what are we going to play on the way out?
Have we got anything lined up?
Have we got, what's this, DJ Airhorn? Have we got a song to play out on
DJ
the way out?
DJ Airhorn?
What's Anal Curly Whirly? What's that? What is that?
Is that for our show?
You haven't given us a song. This is the one time that we've wrapped it up on
have
the
we
exact
not got,
time.
Have we not got David Essex's Ghostbusters?
Oh, my God. You've really let us down here.
Natalie.
This is the one time we've been really professional and we've absolutely nailed it. Anyway, without further ado, I'm back next week. You're back next week.
Yeah.
You're not back next
week. I'm not
week.
Back
not
next
back
week.
Next no, week no. But you are.
Are you back next week?
You're here yeah, next
good,
week.
Because you were come missing this
Time
week.
And Tide.
Yeah, go and see Time and Tide.
Go and see Time and Tide at the Park Theatre, Finsbury Park, right next to the bowling alley.